This financial year, Australia is forecast to export $250 billion worth of mining and energy resources. That's more than during the mining boom. High global demand and a low Australian dollar are contributing factors, but so too is a revolution in mining technology. There are mineral deposits buried so deeply in the ground that till now they've been impossible to extract. It's far too hot and dangerous for humans to go that far underground. But autonomous robotic mining promises to bypass those limitations, according to robotics pioneer Hugh Durrant-White. He's the former chief scientific advisor to the UK Ministry of Defence and is now the chief scientist and engineer of New South Wales and director of the Centre for Translational Data Science at the University of Sydney. Professor Durrant-White, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Hi.
What promise does technology hold for the mining industry?
I think mining industry's always been relatively technical, but it's what we call a job that's dull, dirty and dangerous. Trying to remove people from it is a good thing. Trying to do it more efficiently, more productively is a good thing. And automation kind of addresses all of those issues. So on the surface, where you want to move large quantities of material, automated trucks, automated trains, things like that, or underground, where you're trying to work in environments that are potentially very, very hazardous or even completely inaccessible by humans, it's logical to think about using robotics or automation, something to really try and do the excavation, do the mining work.
And in terms of the driverless trucks, driverless trains, we already have them in the Pilbara.
Yeah, they've been in the Pilbara now for probably heading towards a decade. Trucks, drills, trains, excavators, a lot of automated equipment.
Is Australia a leader in this field?
Far and away, it's the leader in the world. And to some degree, you'd expect that because we pay a lot of attention to mining technology in this country more than almost anywhere else. And robotics has been developed here and it's been applied here. And the big companies in mining are based here.
And Rio and BHP have the money to meet these, what I expect would be enormous upfront costs.
Yeah, it's not so much the upfront costs, it's the long-term vision. You know, it's a recognition that if you're going to develop robotics, it doesn't just happen overnight. You really have to spend a decade or two decades really trying to get it right. It's not just a question of building a robot, it's a question of linking all the robots together to work productively together to execute on the mining activity.
So how deep can humans go and how deep can robots go?
That's a good question. In Australia, and I'm not sure precisely, but the deepest I've been is the deep copper body in Mount Isa, which is about 3.5 kilometres underground. And at that depth, the rock temperatures are about 55 degrees centigrade. That's the rock itself. So you cannot really take people further down than that. Okay, and yet it's well known that that ore body, the copper ore body at Mount Isa, goes down much, much further than that. In fact, so far, they never really even found the bottom of it. So beyond that point, it's exactly the sort of place where you would expect to use automation. And indeed, places like underground mines like Mount Isa do use a lot of automation and indeed remotely operated vehicles so that they can mine at that depth and keep people away from those sorts of environments, hot temperatures, dusty, and also potentially dangerous.
So what kind of efficiencies can then be gleaned from not having people there? What are the safety requirements that are no longer required?
So let's break it out into two parts. There's safety, and I think particularly underground, that's crucial because it means that you can mine, for example, in what are called open stopes. So these are areas where there are rock falls, and a lot of modern mines are what are called caved operations, which means that they deliberately allow things to come down so you can excavate them. Clearly, if you don't have people underground, then a big cost, which is air conditioning, to try and keep it cool enough for people to go down there can be removed. Other things like lighting, whole ranges of other sorts of pieces that need to go there, as well as the fact that actually a lot of money is actually spent keeping people safe and cool and comfortable when they're driving these vehicles. And in an automated situation, you don't need any of that.
Does this mean all these jobs will go?
Yes, certainly the jobs that are involved in simply driving trucks around will disappear, much in the same way as if we automated taxis, there's going to be fewer taxi drivers.
Are there replacement jobs?
So I've studied quite a bit the consequence of automation and computing in jobs, and I think there are plenty of jobs at the bottom. in the sense of what I think of as blue-collar workers who would drive vehicles or have fine manual dexterity or involved in machining and other sorts of operations like that. There are also, interestingly, plenty of jobs at the top. So people who interview others for radio shows, who do other creative applications, there are still jobs for those. I think the challenge is it's the middle jobs that go. It's the people who used to look at the data on a screen or process the data in a spreadsheet. Those sorts of jobs are being automated, and there are not obvious replacements for those middle jobs.
Really? So it's not the blue-collar mining union member worker who's going to go, it's his middle manager boss?
No, exactly correct. The jobs that are actually being replaced are those that are sort of analytical or repeatable, and a lot of those occur in the middle management area.
Can unmanned robotic mining deliver the same yield efficiency as manned mining?
Yes, provably so. I think the operations that are now running in the Pilbara are at least as efficient as what was there in manned operations before. And I'm going to amplify that a little bit because we're at that early stage in automation where what we're doing is taking platforms like trucks and simply not having someone in them and have computers control and operate them. And that's one way of gaining efficiencies. But there is a much, much bigger efficiency that if you can really control things that well and operate them that well, then actually you do mining quite differently. You would selectively, for example, go and take that little piece of ore and then that little piece of ore and add the two together to get exactly the right product that this person wants and so on.
Isn't that extraordinary?
With precision and accuracy that are very hard to achieve with a manual operation, automation gives you the control that you can actually just operate completely differently.
On a needs basis, kind of like keyhole surgery.
Yep. Now, that hasn't happened yet, but those are the opportunities that automation opens up.
What about the ever-present need to find where the minerals are?
That's a really interesting question. You know, we hear a lot about AI and machine learning, and one of the areas I'm really interested in is the application of AI to find minerals. And it is a very interesting area. We hear a lot about big data, and there is a lot of data in mining. We have electromagnetic scans, we have gravity scans, lots of other data. And the question, if you like, the big $64 million question, is how we can take all the data that we've gathered over many, many years about the geology of Australia and use that to discover, in an unsupervised way, using AI, what actually lies underneath all that sand and regolith, as it's called, in the middle of Australia that we sometimes fly over on the way to Perth. That really is a big thing. If you ever look at a map of Australia and where there are mines, there's lots of mines in the west and lots of mines in the east, and there's nothing in the middle.
Speaking of which, the prospect of technology means that those mines in the northwest and the northeast can be operated, what, from computer centres in the CBD of Sydney and Perth?
That already happens. So certainly a lot of the big mines in the Pilbara are now run from an office just outside Perth.
Not run administratively, you mean actually run technically?
Yes. All the people who schedule the trains, do the geology, everything else, live in fact in an operation in Perth and no longer live in the Pilbara.
On RN, it's Sunday Extra. We're with robotics pioneer Professor Hugh Durrant-White. Are there skeptics in the industry? Miners who aren't as excited about this future as you?
So I think a decade ago, I would say most miners were skeptics. But I think now, because of the demonstrable outcomes that have happened over the last decade, and certainly the operations now, I think they're in the minority. A lot of it's a question of how people are best going to use automation rather than will automation happen, and how you can actually make sure that that actually really builds the sorts of mining productivity, safety outcomes that I've been talking about. And that's not so much how you build a robot as how you use it. And that's the knowledge that the mining company itself has to develop as part of the process.
But it sounds like there'll still be an inherent risk. It's a very risky industry. Cost overruns, yields lower than expectations. Can technology used the right way make mining less risky, fewer companies going bust?
Yeah, so that comes a little bit to some of my other interests in the whole innovation problem in mining. You know, mining companies or mining itself is used to very large one-off investments. I will spend $2-3 billion to open up a mine. And yet the tech sector, of course, is used to much smaller but many, many more investments, that half of which fail. And so how do you bring those two cultures together? How do you create the kind of innovation ecosystem in mining where you can try things like a new piece of automation, a new piece of AI, and half the time it doesn't work, and yet your project will still work as a whole? And I think that's the big one of the big questions we're trying to answer. There's a certainly a culture in mining where you never make mistakes because of all the issues in safety and finance. And yet they really are trying hard to innovate by using all this new technology.
And if you're changing the culture, you know, a little bit less Kalgoorlie, a little bit more Silicon Valley, San Francisco, are you perhaps taking the romance out of the game?
Oh, no, I think you're putting the romance in. I think it's wonderful to imagine what you could do with all this material like AI and robotics in these sort of remote locations. And it brings you really to just a very different view of Australia's role in the technology and resources space. And I think it's a very, very positive view.
What about the ethical questions that are ever present in the mining industry, environmental and others? Does technology have the promise of influencing these outcomes?
That's a tricky question. It's a question in my new role in the New South Wales government as a chief scientist. We deal a lot with, pollution, environment contamination, permission to mine. These sorts of things are big questions that governments need to answer, and the social license to be involved in mining and those sorts of things. I think in principle, automation could help in that because it could produce a much, much smaller footprint for the mining operation itself, and particularly if more and more of it goes to very deep underground. So it's not large, open-cut operations. Having said that, I'm not sure automation is yet ready to step up to that kind of outcome, but I think it offers the potential to do that. I think there are many more ethical issues, as you pulled out a little bit earlier, around where AI and machine learning is going in selecting what you mine and how you run the environment and things like that. But again, still all unanswered.
And of course, it falls to people to make these decisions about how to frame and program robots and artificial intelligence. What about things like driverless cars? There's this ethical question of should the driverless car hit the pedestrian in order to save the passenger?
Yes, well, those are human choices, though, in the end. If you wish to have driverless taxis, you have to make decisions and you have to program to implement those and make those choices. But in the end, this is why I love the little quote from a very well-known AI person in the community who said, I worry about AI superintelligence the same way I worry about overpopulation on Mars. I don't think that actually AI is yet at the point where it's going to make decisions all by itself. It very much is about the way that we program them and the way that we control them. So they're not about to get out of control. There's a question of how humans operate those platforms.
And never would that have been more central than at your previous work as Chief Scientific Advisor to the UK Department of Defence.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, what would be your message to people who say advancing coal mining and advancing British military sophistication is not a good use of your demonstrable talent?
Well, I would have to clearly disagree on a number of things, because I think certainly on the mining side of things, we've changed the productivity equation, we've changed the safety equation, we've changed a lot of things. And I think to some degree that can be said about defence. At the moment, defence is grappling with the problem of what role robotics would have in defence. So I think most countries have a stated policy at the moment to not use autonomy in defence without human supervision in many different ways, because I don't think people are really, if you like, defence itself does not have the social right to operate in those sorts of domains. Having said that, our adversaries are undoubtedly looking and doing things like that, and it's a question of how we adjust our rules and our understandings to deal with problems like that. I think more problematic indeed than robotics is the AI, the algorithms, you know, how those are used. For example, artificial intelligence bots on the net trying to cyber attack Australia from Russia or cyber attack elsewhere. This is something which is simply illegal in a lot of the Western countries and yet is happening regardless. So there are many, many ethical issues in these processes. But what is not going to happen any time in the near future is anything like some robot terminator, which is what people fear. We are so far away from that, I believe me, do not lose any sleep over it. And I'm the expert.
Excellent. Well, Professor Hugh Durrant-White, thank you very much for being on Sunday Extra.
Okay, thank you very much.
And Hugh Durrant-White is the New South Wales Chief Scientist and Engineer. He'll be delivering the 21st Annual Kenneth Finlay Memorial Lecture, hosted by the University of New South Wales School of Minerals and Energy Resources Engineering. We'll be putting a link on the website.